Yeah, good to be with you guys.
All right, so where does life stand on the Carson Wentz front as of today?
Well, it seems to be a waiting game, and as you may know, I've been wrong on this. I think I'm going to be wrong on that. Now I'm not even sure I'm going to be wrong, but I was standing on a hill saying there's no way they're going to trade him because I didn't think they would take on this debilitating $34 million of cap hit. And for your listeners, dead cap is really when you have all these bonuses pushed out to gain cap room early in the contract, so everything's prorated. But the proration stops the moment of severance, whether it's a trade or release, and all that unamortized bonus would accelerate. To the tune of $34 million for Wentz would be the highest cap charge in the history of the league by a good amount. And I just never thought the Eagles would do it. But, what we've seen over the past 2 months is zero comment from the Eagles that they want him. Zero comment from Wentz that he wants to stay. Zero comment from the new coach that he looks forward to working with him. And the rumors about the Eagles shopping him. So it looks like it's going to happen. The only question is when.
We have seen in the NBA, and this doesn't go to the Wentz part, but players, James Harden being the most recent, that have seemed to have the ability to dictate their way out of one situation into another. Now, we've had Russell Wilson, people wonder. Aaron Rodgers always plays that little game with the media. Deshaun Watson. In reality, do NFL players have the same kind of leverage like NBA players do?
I don't think so. I just tweeted this at Andrew Brandt. You know, I just think what Harden did is really, I mean, he disrupted two franchises, maybe three or four, actually.
Right.
And I just don't know if there's an NFL player that can do that. You know, here's the problem for NFL players. They don't have free agency. The only guy who's made a difference in free agency as an A-lister and gotten to free agency is the guy that just won the Super Bowl,
that's
Brady.
Right.
And it took him 20 years to get there.
Right.
So, you know, LeBron's been free agent multiple times. Durant's been free agent multiple times. Kawhi, multiple times. Kyrie. You know, I can't name an NFL free agent of an A-list variety. It just never happens. Why? Because teams throw a ton of money at him, going to sign long-term, and then, of course, the franchise tag.
And many of LeBron's recent contracts have been of the two-year variety, which allows him to opt out after 1 year, which then when the salary cap goes up, he gets more money based on the new cap. So,
yeah, and I think the thing about NFL players is, I mean, now you have in the news, you're right, Aaron a couple weeks ago and Russell and Deshaun Watson, three true A-listers, three of the best players in the league. I'm going to say none of them are in different places. Because at some point, you know, you've got to sit back and say, your front office, like I was for 10 years, whatever's going on, you're not stupid. You know, you're not going to trade the best players in the league. And they can't trade themselves. So I just think they're all going to be there.
Let me ask you this, B. I mean, I want to, on that experience, many athletes, not just because of sunshine, will live in a place like Texas or Florida, reason being there's no state income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Although for some reason New Hampshire doesn't seem to attract them, but that's a different story, okay, with no state income tax. Did it ever make a difference for an athlete, or is it always just the highest number they saw?
You know, I was in Wisconsin. I don't think it ever, we had decently high taxes. I don't think it ever became an issue. I'm sure that the Jaguars and the Tampa Bay and Miami Dolphins and others use that. But I don't remember it being an issue. And, you know, it really comes down to opportunity. I think we were able to get players to stay in Green Bay and turn down teams like that, because we had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. A lot of things go into these decisions.
A lot has been made of the viewership decline, but everybody declined this year.
Yeah.
Now, some of it's different time of the year, but I mean, the Stanley Cup final down 61%. I mean, the Masters was in November, so that was more than 50% down. Kentucky Derby, the NBA Finals are down 49%, World Series 30%. Super Bowl's down 9%, but let me take it from a different angle, if you don't mind, Andrew. It's not the 9%, which shows it's much healthier than everybody else. But in 2015, when Wilson and the Seahawks played the Patriots, and Butler had the interception at the goal line, they estimated it was $114.4 million. This time, with including the streaming numbers, it's $96.4 million. That's down 18 million viewers based on those numbers in a six-year span. Is that concerning at all?
I think concerning is too strong a word. You know, it's in one sense, it's that the NFL is immune from a lot of things, but it's not immune from the cord cutters. You know, what you just said about all the other sports, their crown jewels being down multiples of 9%, just shows you how strong the NFL is actually in this COVID environment.
Right.
And I guess, you know, here's my point on all this. Who cares, right?
Right.
From a business point of view, who cares? Do you think, does anyone listening think, NBC, CBS, ESPN, Fox is going to come to the NFL negotiations and say, yeah, you were a little down this year, I'm going to keep my offer a little lower? Like, if that happens, they're thrown out of the room. They don't, you know, they're gone. So they're going to get massive new media deals. And I think they'd get the same media deal if it was 114, then it's 96. And, you know, listen, it's the most powerful programming on television by far. By far.
Right.
I mean, 96. I think the closest this year is probably going to be 50, which is the NFC Championship.
Right.
And then maybe the Oscars. I don't know.
I think what I saw, I want to say I saw the top 100 programs, 79 were NFL games.
Yeah, not only going to have NBC, CBS, Fox, they're going to have Yahoo, Google, YouTube, Amazon, right, Twitter as an and, not an or, like and. So the money's going to be crazy.
So now I want to bring in the ESPN ABC part of this. They have Monday Night Football, as we all know, but they don't have a Super Bowl. How could this potentially play out for them?
Well, they're already paying a lot more. And, you know, people ask me, why is ESPN paying so much more? And that's because they have all the shoulder programming. These other networks don't have time in their day to put NFL programming on. You know, the ESPN's got an NFL show twice a day, I think. So, you know, I think the money's going to go even higher. If I'm ESPN, I would just say, beyond the money, like, come on. You know, we've been paying double of what these other networks have been paying. Give us a Super Bowl. And it slowly, you know, it took a long time for the NFL to give them a wild card playoff game, so it's coming. I don't know when, but sometime in the next round of contracts.
Right. Well, they had to pay an extra $100 million to get the playoff game, if I recall the number correctly.
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, so the NFL is more than willing to do it. There's always a complaint about Thursday Night Football, but nobody in the front office complains when the checks are cashed. How important is Thursday Night Football as an economic supplement, even though for the players it can be problematic of having little rest on a given week?
Yeah, I did see a report that the bidding is not what they thought it would be for Thursday Night Football. Now, Fox has it. They bid up from NBC, CBS a couple of years ago, so they've got a nice package now, but we'll see. I mean, it outperforms every other programming on Thursday night, as it does on Sunday night and Monday night. So it'll be around. Listen, I understand the player safety viewpoint, but, you know, I dealt with Thursday Night Football a lot, and players sure love that mini bye afterwards. Where,
right.
And I did too. As an executive, that's where my favorite weekends were. You know, we had played, especially if we won, and you're just off. I mean, you are off. Not even a bye week off. You're just completely off for 3 days, 4 days. So it's nice.
What was your favorite weekend, and what did you do with it? like that you remember, like, hey, we got the bye weeks, and you look back and say, man, that was the best weekend I had during a season. What was that?
Yeah, well, we played one year at San Francisco, and I was 3 days in the wine country after that.
Ah, very nice. Yes, yeah. that would be something. My broadcast partner for Penn State, Jack Ham, he loves his annual trip to wine country. He loves it there.
It was a wonderful trip until I was at this little winery and a busload of Packer fans, because they're everywhere.
Yes.
They pull up and they recognize me, so I ducked out of there real fast.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. Does Brady get... Brady does a lot of great things. I mean, just on the pure game itself, you know, does Brady get too much criticism, too much credit? Where does Brady fall for you?
You know, I understand how big a team sport is, so I say he gets too much. You know, and I sort of think about Sunday, where the star of the game was the defense and the defensive coordinator. Brady didn't play bad at all. He played pretty well. But,
yeah.
I mean, he gets the credit. And, you know, listen, anything I say here, I'm going to get accused of being a Brady hater. And it's not the case at all.
It's okay to have an honest conversation where you said he played well. Okay, you can play well but not be perfect.
Yeah. And listen, I'm biased. My time with Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, Aaron outplayed him 2 weeks ago. And, you know, Brady had 3 picks in 7 minutes in that game.
Yep.
So I just think, you know, the unfortunate thing for the Packers is in a game like that, it seems like Aaron has to play completely perfect. And the Bucs had a team where Tom did not have to play perfect. So, you know, it is a team sport. It is a complete team sport. What bugs me is that I hear this narrative that Brady got past Breeze, Rodgers, and Mahomes. And I'm like, hello, he was never on the field with any of those guys.
No. Like,
yes, never exactly played right. A down in the same field. So.
I mean, this is how I looked at it. I felt the MVP of the game, with all due respect to Tom Brady, I thought it was Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett. And I also felt Tampa Bay, because you and I both know matchups mean everything. Any game I do, I'm looking at where the matchups here. When they play Green Bay with Bakhtiari out, and then 60% of the shuffle of the offensive line for Kansas City, it played into how Tampa Bay plays, and Todd Bowles had good plans, simple but good plans in both games. And I think sometimes you get to this point, quote, luck falls into your favor on the matchups, and I think for Tampa Bay in some ways it did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's all matchups. I thought the biggest play of the playoffs was stripping Jared Cook.
Oh, yes.
When they were up 7 or up 10 or going in to be up 10.
Yep.
Because, again, I'm going back to my Packer bias. I thought the Packers matched up really well with New Orleans. And I thought they did not match up well with Tampa.
Yeah.
So, it proved out.
Finally, this one. The NFL was able to play every game. Now, it became adventurous on certain weeks. Obviously, the Steelers and the Ravens played on a Wednesday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
How impressed were you, if that's the proper word, that the fact the NFL was able to do this?
Very impressed. You know, I was in the offseason saying things like, I don't know, you know. I, especially the opposite of social distancing, is playing football. So I was impressed, you know, but we have to understand they did it with, you mentioned, one game with 23 players on the COVID list, the Ravens, one game without an NFL-ready receiver, 49ers, and one game without an NFL-ready quarterback, Broncos.
Right.
And that's okay, I guess, if we're, you know, we just want to get through. Here's the thing I worry about, and I worried about all year, is negative outcomes. If some of these players have long-term complications, that's what would keep me up at night if I'm an NFL exec. chances are 99.9% are completely fine, but I wouldn't want to be dealing with a player that's having respiratory issues next year. You know, that would scare me.
I apologize for lying about last question. I did have one follow-up, and that's from the business side of it. Even for a league like the National Football League, how important is it for them to get actually fans really back in the stands financially?
Yeah, I mean, my estimate is 20%. So yeah. total revenues, 20% of them are game day. Not just fans, but concessions, parking, et cetera. Now, that's only half of what baseball is. Baseball is 40%.
Exactly.
Because the NFL has so much more media money. But, yeah, 20% of $15 billion is $3 billion. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, they're hopeful like everyone else for 2021. We'll see.
There is no place like Green Bay. There's no place like St. Norbert's. Everything up there. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So it is incredible. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. I always enjoy the conversation. It's outstanding. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And your listeners can know I now do a newsletter if they want to sign up. So
please,
go to Andrew-Brandt. Andrew-Brandt.com and sign up for the weekly newsletter on Sunday.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much.
All right.
Appreciate that.